Welcome into Real Kipper and Bourne. My name is Justin Bourne, and I am joined today not by Real Kipper, the fake Kipper today. It's my friend, Sam McKee. Sammy, how are you, pal?
Hey, buddy. Sliding on over to the big desk.
Yes, yeah. Nice to have you. We are
Kippy
on...
could no longer fight.
No, Kippy lost the battle. He was so proud of himself. You gave him props for fighting through illness, and it took him down, team. It took him down. Sad day. Hope he's okay. We're thinking of him.
Yeah.
Do a tribute to him later in the show. We're on Sportsnet 590, Sportsnet 360, and Sportsnet Plus from today, 4:30 to 6 p.m. Mm-hmm. You can get our podcast wherever you get your pods, and remember to text us at 590-590, and Sammy will scan through those and maybe read a couple. We shall see. How you doing, man?
I'm doing well. I had something that I wanted to bring up with you. Tonight is, I know this is very relevant to everybody watching nationally, but it may be more in the GTA. Tonight is game four of the OHL finals with the London Knights and the Oshawa Generals.
Yes.
I had tickets. Mm-hmm. I bought a ticket. I paid $50 to my good friend David for the ticket where he was going to pick me up here and we were going to go out there. And I texted him this morning. I said, I can't bear to do it. I can't go out there and watch the London Knights go out there and win the championship. And I fully mega bailed on seeing a championship of like the Leafs top prospect. I just couldn't get past my hate for the London Knights. People would kill to go watch it. And so I absolutely could not do it. I was like, no, I'm sorry. No other reason. Gonna go home, lie on the couch.
I'm your friend. I'm like, what? So what? I got to go by myself.
No, he's going. There's other guys going. So it was the four of us were going. The other two guys are going still. But I was like, no, I'm not going out there. To like, it's like going to watch. It's like the Habs being up 3-0 and me going to watch the game of them winning. It's like, no, there's just no chance I'm going to see that happen.
It's funny, too, given the London Knights ties to your Toronto Maple Leafs. Obviously, Marner and Domi and here comes Cowan. A lot of great players.
Kadri played there.
Imagine the overlap between Leafs fans and Knights fans is significant.
There's a ton. Yeah, so.
Love London as a city and all that, but
you know what?
Handle the teammates.
It's brutal, and I just know what it's going to be out there. Like, a lot of Oshawa fans will be bailing. They'll be pulling the chute. The guys will be ripping down the 401 coming from London. It's going to be a coronation of green and gold and black. I'm like, nope. I'm out. Sitting on the couch, baby. No chance I'm experiencing that. So there you go. That's where I'm at today.
All right, so you're not going to be checking that out.
No.
But we do have a half hour today. We're going to be joined by J.D. Bunkus today. A little Leafs talk. A little Leafs talk throwback. We'll get everyone in the same room here. Well, actually, J.D.'s going to zoom in at some point.
He's going to zoom in at some point.
So before we get to that, I have been covering the playoffs, as you have. But I've been watching Vancouver, Edmonton, Sportsnet ties that we do have. The Canucks series has stood out to me. I wrote today about one defining feature of that being Elias Pettersson. Mm-hmm. And he's struggling. Got a goal and 3 assists.
Struggling.
In 10 games.
I mean, there's struggling, and then there's looking the most terrified I've seen a star look in a long time. And I'm in a city here where I've watched Mitch Marner. Like, deer in the headlights does not begin to explain it, Borny.
Well, and that Marner comparison is pretty reasonable, I think, because it's guys who are elite players, who control offense for their teams, who their team counts on, who just, you can't see why. They just don't seem to have that same pop, and Canucks fans, not reasonable.
Well, I think a lot of it has to do with the contract, clearly, where everyone was really excited to get him signed. He signs the contract and then kind of immediately is not the same guy. And we had very similar conversations here with Willie, where I remember sending some snarky tweets like 2 games after when he had no points. I'm like, oh boy, it was an overpay.
But it was a long run.
He wasn't great. But in the playoffs, when he played, he performed. He was one of the only guys that actually scored for the Leafs. So like that puts your heart at ease a little bit.
Yeah.
But it hasn't flipped at all for Pettersson. I see him talking today to the Vancouver media. He's sitting up there. He just doesn't seem like he's happy. He doesn't seem like he's got any part of his life that's redeeming right now. The weight of the world is on his shoulders. And as you know, that is no way to play in an NHL hockey game or an NHL playoff series that's pressure-packed. Yeah. That's all you're thinking about. Everybody's texting you. It's going to come. You're fine. Don't worry.
Yeah.
And like Rick Tocchet's airing him out in the media. Like, I can't imagine what he's feeling right now. He needs a couple to bounce off Evan Bouchard's butt in or something.
But he needs to be around the net for that to happen. And so I wrote about it today. You can check that out on sportsnet.ca. I did a video breakdown of basically what's been going on with this guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, Tocchet had some comments where he said, we can't be playing pause hockey, which like he said, it just looks like we're pausing before mm-hmm. making that play, you know, thinking rather than just, or sorry, reacting rather than thinking. And it is remarkable. I tried so hard not to write the Marner comparison in there because I didn't want to make Canucks fans annoyed by bringing up Toronto. But there is this thing that were I a coach or a video coach in the NHL today, how do you get in on these defenses that pack it in? The Canucks right now, through 10 games of a postseason, have the fewest shots in NHL history?
According to Sportsnet stats, buddy.
Like
the boy Stevie Fallon, he would never be wrong. So there you go.
That's insane to me. And so they're getting shut down, and you look at the Avalanche are getting shut down mm-hmm. by Dallas. You look what happened to the Leafs offense. Teams pack it in, and you just can't score the same way.
And yeah, I get, but some teams do.
Some teams do.
And that's where you have to figure out what the recipe is for those teams. Love and that. You look at the type of players. I mean, I guess we're going to talk about Florida and Boston in the second hour a little bit, and Florida gets stymied last night, but look what they did in the first round. Look what they've done in the first few games against Boston. They have the type of players that like to fight to get to the middle of the ice and are willing to do that. And like, it's not that hard. There's cliches for a reason. Getting to the dirty areas is a cliche for a reason. Getting into the corners, fighting in the corner, like, it's a very simple game boarding.
It is, but you have to not just find the guys that do that, because you can get a lot of unskilled people who will do that. You need to find the guys like a Sam Bennett mm-hmm. who is willing to go there, not just willing to, but wants to go there.
But like, he can't wait to get there.
Or can also shoot it in the net. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a unique combination of skills here in Toronto. The one guy that has received some love from playoffs is Matthew Nyes, mm-hmm. who can put it away, but wants to go there too. So yeah, to me, it's almost like, and this is the make the analytics people go crazy. It's almost like the pendulum swinging towards analytics is swinging back towards okay, but it's not just that. And Carolina is another example of this where people are going, great, they have all these guys that drive analytics. Do they have enough guys that do these things? And so there's some personality analysis, like who are the guys who drive analytics who also are jerks?
Yeah.
You know, and like trying to find those guys is, you know, scouts should be happy. I think they're more relevant than ever. Good news. I believe we are now joined by our third host, the host of Leafs Talk, our man, J.D. Bunkus. What's up, Bunk?
Nothing. I look like I'm in a shadow cave.
No, you look very bright to me.
I was like, really? Okay, good. Because I'm trying to sit up on the Zoom here with the fellas, and I was dying trying to figure this sucker out. I'm old, man. I'm a full boomer when it comes to technology.
I was about to go on the television, and he's like, you gotta send me the link of the Zoom. I don't have it on my computer.
Bunk's the guy who kills me every time it takes 1 second to get a link going.
I'm like, I'm sitting here. He's like, send me the Zoom link to my old Gmail on my old computer.
Yeah. Send it. How do you get the sound to come on?
Oh my god.
Nothing. We were just doing the comparison, which I think you might get a bit of a kick out of. In Vancouver right now, they're killing Elias Pettersson for being outside the traffic, not producing. Oh. One of the reasons the offense isn't there for the Canucks, and making the comparison to Marner here and some of the heat he took from Leafs fans.
So I literally did this today on my show.
Oh, did you?
Perfect. How could you not?
You've practiced.
How could you not make the comparison? I'm just saying, like, here's the difference, though. Marner didn't just sign a $92 million extension. Yeah. Like, did you guys see the post game with Tockett where he says, some of our guys just got to start playing. Some of our guys don't know it's the playoffs.
Yeah.
I think the problem is actually that Pettersson does know it's the playoffs.
Yeah, too much.
And he's like, he's thinking, it's the playoffs. I'm not interested. How much money am I going to have in my account soon? I think that there's like worst contracts in hockey potential here.
Oh,
like,
no. He
is dreadful. Man, here's the thing. Okay, so this is the Marner thing too. We talk about this a ton. You got regular season players, and then you've got postseason players. And so Pettersson year over year is going to help the Canucks make the postseason. That's pretty clear and obvious. But like, we're in round two now. Has he had a good game? Has he had like strung together a couple of good shifts? Not from what I've seen. And so, like, wouldn't you be nervous as a Canucks fan that you're basically signing up for something very similar to the Mitch Marner narrative, which is you just paid a guy first type of number one player money to be not a number one type of playoff player? Like, isn't that what this is all about, is to win in the playoffs? Like, I don't know. I'd be nervous as hell. Like, he's been awful.
I think, I mean, he had the face-off win that led to the tying goal last night on Besser, and people are pointing, whatever. He's been bad. He hasn't been
nearly
good.
That's the bar then?
Yeah, yeah, basically.
That's the bar. Well, I mean, like, face-off win.
Yeah, I mean, well, the bar for Marner shifted big time. Well, he's been great defensively. Like, it's like, well, he makes $11 million to not be great defensively.
Suppression numbers.
Yeah, exactly. See them. But here, like, the scary thing is that, you know, perception is such a huge thing, and especially with a Vancouver fan base, which is one of the most, you know, they're dialed in. Let's just say that. They're a very fan base. And if you get this rep already, like, they don't really have many playoff experiences with Pettersson. You know, they had the bobble or whatever. But that wasn't real. This will start to carry you, and everybody will start to expect this from you, which adds to the pressure where he's already kind of panicking. Like, this has a chance to snowball even worse further down the line in his 8-year contract that he just signed. It's a horrible start to the contract and people's perception of him.
Have you guys, though, been soliciting opinions of Vancouver fans?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I look at the text line every day from Vancouver, and people are killing him.
Yeah, but I would say that this is a classic Vancouver situation where the three of us talking about it, they're going to text in about the face-off win, and then amongst their own circle, they're going to kill him.
Yes.
But if outsiders have an opinion on Petey, as they call him, they're going to go, oh, we haven't given up on the guy. Like, they're going to be doing that.
I actually like
that.
I like the tribal nature of Canucks fans.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't know about you guys, but, like, I have different takes to, like, different groups. Where it's like, sometimes I play, like, a certain card to different groups, and then other ones, they're definitely doing that with, like, Toronto people talking.
You code switch
sometimes,
in sports circles?
Here and there. Sometimes I like to switch it up. But, yeah, they're definitely doing that in their circles. Like, they're panicking, no doubt.
Yeah.
That's like me with – oh, sorry, go ahead.
Oh, no, I just wanted to kind of keep it on the Canucks and make the ties to Toronto and the type of players who have success. Dakota Joshua has 4 goals and 4 assists in 10 games, 8 points playing on that line. Mikheyev, by the way, has zeros across the board in 10 games. But there's no doubt, and I was saying to Sam before you came on, not sure if you heard, but like the pendulum that swung towards analytics and data, which matter, has also swung back to like, okay, but. And playoffs seem to be such a different animal that real context is needed.
Yeah, I totally agree. By the way, somebody told me that Dakota Joshua just flat out didn't want to play here.
Yeah.
Had you heard the same thing, Borny?
No, I hadn't.
We got traded for future considerations from the Leafs to the
that
Blues.
That sounds likely then.
Yeah, and then...
If you're a Leaf fan and you're pissed about that one and you're looking at it through the lens of being angry at Dubas for, you know, losing all the trades.
we don't need a reason to drum that one up. We got any time.
No, but I just think, like, this guy's having a spectacular playoffs. He's been incredible for them. And it's a guy that I was asking around and people told me that he was a non-starter for being here. So for whatever that's worth, I'm with you. This is always the way things go, though, right? Like, this is the way of the world. You react one way, it goes way too far. And then people start to look at it and say, whoa, we kind of have to pump the brakes here. The whole premise of our sport or premise of the thing that was going on, like, not everything should go out with the bathwater, right? Mm-hmm. Not like you don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. And so do I think that there was a time when we were probably coveting things like heart and effort level too much? Were there times where we looked at things and said, hey, the game is changing. Maybe we should be able to evaluate a player that's a $190 who can actually finish and skate a little differently than a guy who's 215 but can't do those things? Yeah, of course. But yeah, I think that some of the game went too far. And I think I've mentioned this to you guys as well. This is also a part of us cooling off with social media, I swear to God, because the beauty of analytics is you can package anything up into a nice, tidy presentation, just like you can with a tweet, right? Hey, here's my argument. It's succinct. It's easy to digest. And it's something that you can't really refute. Whereas if you're going to use your eyes for something or you're going to use traditional lines of thinking with stuff like physical play or playoff hockey, it makes you sound like a caveman and you're spitting out gobbledygook. Even right there, I was kind of having trouble doing it. So, no, I think we're swinging back, and you're starting to hear it from players, right? When they're talking about the game, you're hearing it from executives who are doing the, like, we told you so, basically.
The old hockey men are like, we were always right.
Yeah, especially some of the hockey men that are on the outside right now that feel as though they should still be back on the inside. And, yeah, I think that we're coming back. My only question is, how far is it going to go?
Yeah. So, just talking about the Leafs coaching situation, I haven't really talked to you a whole lot about this. Where are we at on it, Bob? Yeah. Are you, like, is it Berube or bust here? What's the...
I don't care.
You don't care? Yeah, I know. I hate to admit that I am in the same boat. I don't really care.
I am in full no-care mode. If
due
you want
to
ask
lack of information sort of thing, like, just don't really know what the difference would be?
Okay, so I love Berube. The idea of Berube coming in here and being a guy who has, like, pelts on the wall and who's like, look me up on hockeyfights.com and then see if you're going to show up and not work hard today. Ooh, like that.
Yeah.
Believe that that is a guy who understands accountability and who could really help with the culture of this team. And I think I've mentioned this to you guys before, but I really do think the Leafs' next head coach has to be someone with those, like, real bona fides that the players can look at and say, oh, okay, this is a guy who's been there and done that. And Berube's, like, played in the market. He's got a billion penalty minutes, right? He's coached a Stanley Cup winning team. Go on down the line. He has the accolades. But, like, you know, he was fired from his team pretty quickly after winning a Stanley Cup. I think that his hiring of assistants is going to be, like, massively crucial. I don't know what Craig Berube is going to be doing in terms of, like, running a power play.
Pray
which
for
is
that
sort
power
of
play
number...
coach next year. Oh, like, the boy. Most has there ever been more eyes on a power play coach coming
in? The
bar's
low for postseason.
That's true.
Hey, guess who it's going to be if it's Berube?
Yeah, it'd be Savvy.
Our boy, Mark Savard.
Yeah, for sure.
Come on down. That's his buddy, and he runs a power play. He runs a mean one. So maybe it's going to end up being Savvy. But my thing is do I think Craig Berube can be, like, a good head coach? Yes. Do I see some of the positives in having him? Absolutely. Am I going to overreact, though, if they make it Todd McClellan and be like, I can't believe that they would go? Like, no. Mm-hmm. Seems foolish. To me, the issues with the Toronto Maple Leafs extend far beyond the coaching staff. That's why people started to get sentimental when Sheldon Keefe was fired and he did his little Lake Ontario video. People went like, you're so classy, Sheldon, because all of us sort of know that, hey, maybe he wasn't the best coach and maybe he wasn't the best hire at given the time of where the organization was at. But if you really believe that, like, the Leafs are up on the Panthers 3-1 right now, if they have Craig Berube instead of Sheldon Keefe, like, I got a bridge in Brooklyn to sell you. Yeah. So, like, the problems run so much deeper. And I think that while we're all waiting to know whether or not Mitch Marner will waive his no movement clause, or if John Tavares, when he comes back from almost losing to Austria and the Farmers.
Hey, they learned. He learned.
The Farmers.
Yeah, they learned.
Yeah, there's the quote. We learned a lesson. It's like, stop learning
buddy,
lessons.
He's a Rhodes Scholar in hockey. He knows everything there is to know.
Sorry for going so long, but don't you guys feel like it's just like, it's like the least important thing of the offseason.
So Tavares is a good conversation. Kemper the other day is saying that, you know, this guy may waive. He's no move because, you don't want to burn another bridge with another city and maybe the city would be hard on him. But, you know, in talking to other people, I don't get the sense that's how people in Toronto would feel. I think, and this is a few conversations that I've had, people in Toronto see him differently because he chose to come here into the hard situation, into the, you know, he chose Toronto and all the heat. So would there be some grace for you if you said, look, I picked here, I want to be here, and I still want to be here?
Well, here's the other part of it. Look at what's going on right now in baseball with George Springer, right? Like, you know, you guys just watched the Jays game from the studio.
I did. I watched the entire thing.
Anytime you give a free agent a contract like that, the expectation is that the end of the deal, they're not the same player. The idea was that they would win earlier on the front end of Tavares.
Yeah.
And still, to me, like, are there times where I'm frustrated with John Tavares? Of course. Do I wish that you were getting more ROI on $11 million? Yes. But still, to me, the crazy thing is that a free agent who was a captain in the league and who had actually accomplished things and earned his right to free agency, when he signed that contract, that the RFAs, the young guys, looked at it and said, that's what we want. And that was given. Like, to me, that'll always be the
fatal
point of frustration with Tavares. Like, a UFA getting
well,
big money.
You shouldn't blame him there. You should blame the GM for saying, okay, that's what you want.
Oh, I do.
Yeah.
Oh, I do. I especially blame that GM when it's on record that those contracts could have come at completely different prices had he done them at like the appropriate times and not just twiddled his thumbs and gone, maybe the price will come down. Like, that's
not how contracts
work. The
second after Marner signed and Rantanen signed for like 9.5 or something, it was like,
Braden Point, too. Went right after Braden Point went like the next year, and it was like 9.5 for 8. We're like, oh boy.
God.
Yeah.
Anyways. Maybe he should have read Theo Epstein's second book called Hockey Isn't Baseball, and he would have done a little bit better in contract negotiations.
Yeah.
Yeah. That one is a stinger to this day. So, Bunk, we got 2 minutes here before we leave. We need a last parting thought on the Toronto Maple Leafs off season here. What do you want to see it look like? What's different when we're having this conversation, having Leafs talk in the fall?
I'll tell you what I don't want.
Okay. I'll take that.
Us. If here's what we'll say. If the three of us are sitting around and going, you know, there is a good case to coming back and that these guys could all. Yeah, like.
No,
I can't have me saying it too. I can already hear me making the case.
I know you can. You're the captain of the case. You're captain of the case. I think Sammy and I are at the point where it's like, who cares if you lose the Marner trade? Just don't do the same thing, which is insane.
The thing to me is that I don't know what I want from a Marner trade. I don't know if I want the cap space and. Don't you want the cap space?
I know I want not UC Saros. That's my one thing. I want not UC Saros.
Okay, well, it's like to me, it's you're doing two different types of trades. It's the picks, it's the restock the cupboards, young guy, cap space, or you're trading him for another impact guy that's going to help you like right away, like a Saros, which is kind of my ideal situation. So we completely disagree on that. But like, I think there's two different ways to go. I'm not sure which way. Which way would you go, Bunk?
I just think like anytime you try to get into free agents and trying to bring them to Toronto with the tax situation here, the lifestyle situation here, it's a slippery slope. Like it just hasn't been proven to be the like Vegas or Florida or one of those places where guys just like want to sacrifice the dollars to come. So it's like, if you're trying to get in on the Tanev or the Zadorov or any of like Chandler Stevenson, like all those guys, that just feels like a really tough road for me. So I think you're just going best trade package available, but the end result is what you get back in that deal. If it is prospects or young guys or whatever, that those are getting rerouted somewhere for other talent that fits another team's eye. You got Austin Matthews, you got 4 years left. You're in win now mode. Like the player we saw in that second game that took over, that dominated before the injury. That's the one thing carrying me through this offseason and going, I really think that guy is one of the guys in the league. And he was robbed of the opportunity to showcase it. And if you can just put a competent team around him, like, don't you guys get that feeling too when you're watching McDavid and Draisaitl? You're like, God, if you guys could have had a team around these two, like,
you pretty
should.
Good.
Yeah, like Derek Ryan's out there taking it's his true. $10 million face-offs, and you're like, geez,
their bottom
Louise.
Six like, is killing them. Like, they're getting nothing from any of those guys.
That's what I mean. And so, to me, that's the main thing is, can you build a balanced roster around a guy who I think is one of the bona fides, is one of the top five guys, is a driver? Like, I have not abandoned the idea that Austin Matthews, we're going to see him in the postseason having deep runs. Like, whenever people would do, like, the Leafs-Ovechkin thing about the core four, it's like, it's not – the Leafs' core four is not Ovechkin. Like, Matthews is the Ovechkin.
Yep.
Like, just keep betting on him.
Yeah, I agree. And you know what? Barkov is a good example. He struggled in the playoffs in the past, and he's a guy who's coming through and finding it. You can find JD Bunkus, the host of the JD Bunkus podcast. Follow him at JD Bunkus on Twitter. Bunk, we appreciate your time, pal.
Thanks for coming on, buddy.
I love you, boys. I'll see you soon.
All right, love you, buddy. Talk to you soon. When we come back, we're going to be joined by Dan Riccio, host of Canuck Central. And we're even going to talk to Pete Blackburn, co-host of What Chaos podcast. Should be a fun second hour. We will see you after this break.
Diving deep into Leafs, Raptors, Jays, and NFL. The JD Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Real Kipper and Bourne. I am Justin Bourne, joined by Sam McKee in place of the Real Kipper today. Hello again, Sam.
Hi, Justin.
Hi, welcome to the second hour of the show. We are live on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver and Sportsnet 960 in Calgary. Mm. This hour of Real Kipper and Bourne brought to you by Bet365. Couple of news and notes on Oilers and the Canucks. The Demko thing is getting interesting. Rumors that he has improved immensely.
Improved immensely.
Mm-hmm.
Great.
Has him back as a potential option. A couple of stats, courtesy Sam here. Leon Draisaitl is the third player in the last 35 years to record 20-plus points in fewer than 10 games in a postseason. That being Dry, Connor McDavid, and Mario Lemieux.
Wow.
This guy is a horse.
He is. So, yeah, the Demko thing to me is very interesting. Wasn't it like around game four in the second round? It was like kind of projected in the first series. I remember them saying that it was like maybe around game four. And then it's game five. Now it's like potentially six, maybe seven. To me, it's a dangerous game. And I think we're getting into the situation here where he's clearly, you know, very, very injured. He's probably got it back to a point where it starts to feel passable, like he could play in something. We've all seen the reports about ACL, MCLs. Like, there's all this stuff out there.
Yeah.
It's a dangerous game putting him back in there because, like, you know, you're going deep in the playoffs this year, and he wants to play. He's a competitor, and I get it. And if I'm a Vancouver fan, I'm probably like, yeah, you know, you want your number one goalie in there, a guy that has a real chance to make a difference. But the Canucks also play hockey next year.
Yeah.
There also is a hockey next year, and their goalie in this series, which I thought might be a huge issue for them, Svilovs, like, he hasn't killed them by any stretch. He was really good in a couple of the games. It's a dangerous game to put an ice cold hurt goalie in a game seven again. Like, it's a very interesting conversation. One we can have with Riccio. I think he's there.
Yes, we're going to bring in Dan Riccio, Canucks host of Canucks Central, 4 to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday. Reach, how are you, pal?
I'm doing great, fellas. How are we doing?
We're good.
I'm so happy to be talking to Reach on the television. Me and him go so far back. Like, my first shift ever at the Fan, I was producing a Raptors postgame show, and I had no idea how to, like, patch the call in. And I remember, like, people screaming at me from the other side of the glass, and the cool hand Dan Riccio on the board.
Cool hand Dan. That's cool hand Dan. For sure.
Absolutely crushed it. Got it in there for me. Pat on the back. He's like, "You'll be fine, buddy." We go a long way back. So having this now is incredible.
Well, welcome in, Rich.
Toronto guy talking Vancouver. You know,
don't call him a Toronto guy in Vancouver. That burns all his cred.
I think they know.
Well, now you guys just outed me. I've put on this whole facade for years that I was from Vancouver, born and raised.
Yeah.
Well, we do want to get your thoughts on the Demko thing, and that's secondary. We're going to talk about the game and talk about the series, but while we were talking about Demko, the one thought that comes to mind is the Rick Pitino, like, Larry Bird is not walking through that door press conference. Like, to me, it's good for a team to think, like, hey, don't wait for someone else to do it. He's not going to be here. What are your thoughts on the word that they may get Demko back at some point?
I mean, we've thought about it for a while. We've heard it for a while that he could be back at some point during the second round, and now it's kind of getting into the latter stages here. To me, it is risky, right? He's coming in cold. He's done it before. He looked really good in the two games that he came back and eventually got injured in before the playoffs or at the start of the playoffs, but it's just a lot to ask for a guy. And I think the other part of this, too, is, like, do you bring him back just for him to get hurt again because you've rushed him back, which is sort of the thought process and how he ended up re-injuring his knee there at the start of the playoffs. So I think it's a lot to ask. You're getting a ton from Artur Shelovs right now. Are you going to get more from Thatcher Demko? Of course you could, because he is a Vezina-level goalie, but I'm not sure you can bank on that, throwing him into a game six or seven scenario.
Yeah, that to me as a fan is terrifying, where, you know, the idea of it and the idea of what he can be probably way outweighs what he actually will be. And it's a scenario where, you know, Rick Tocchet would do it potentially in a game seven. I think if the medical staff's like, Thatcher Demko is available, probably going to play him.
Yeah.
But that's something that Vancouver fans, like, there's all these events that are like tentpole events when being a fan. And, like, they put him in there in a game seven, and he lets in four in the first period, and everyone's like, how could Tocchet do? Like, it's such a risk. But the flip
or
side,
he gets the goose
flip side's there. But as a Toronto sports fan, I always go to the complete disaster scenario. I don't know, man. You also got to play hockey next year. Like I said, it's just, it's a very, very risky one. And I would, if I was a coach, Shvilov would be playing the rest of the series and then maybe reevaluate if you get through it to me. That's how I would handle it.
The kid has been pretty good. The last night I thought it was actually maybe his best game, because I thought the Oilers really put the throttle down on the Canucks more so last night than they did in almost any other game. It's always, you look at the shot clock and you're like, man, this guy had to make this many saves. But most of the time, the Canucks don't give up a ton of rush chances. They make the goalie play only half the net. They don't give up the cross ice. They don't give up the seam pass. And so if you're just asking a guy to do that job, Shilovs has been up to it so far in this series. You know, there are a couple of ones, like the one thing that would worry me, he struggles fighting through screens and seeing through screens. And we've seen it in, we saw it early in the Nashville series when he first came in. We've seen it on a couple of the goals in this series, like the Dreisaitl power play goal in game three. He's fighting through the Hyman screen, doesn't see the pass go down to Dreisaitl, and then he's slow to get there to cover his post, and it just bounces off and in him. And I know Dreisaitl is a freak, but you know, if he's on that, if he's making his read properly, if he's seeing the puck through the screen, maybe he does get there. These are little things that are causing big ones, and you even see it a little bit on the winning goal there, where he's just unable to close it up through the sea of bodies that are in front of the Bouchard shot.
For sure. And so, you know, maybe there's goalies in the league who make that save, but he's given you enough at this point to work. And I think the team is probably happy with their team defense. You know, you're kind of, you're not suppressing McDavid entirely, but at 5-on-5, kind of keeping him at bay. So then the question pivots to offense, and the team having fewer shots than any team through 10 games in the history of the National Hockey League, I believe. So what's going on? What's with the slowdown in the offense from the Canucks?
Name the 5 to 6 guys Tockett was talking about.
Name them.
You know, some of it is score effects. You know, the Nashville series was just a slog. And I don't know if I take so much away from that. You end up looking at some of the high danger chances in that series, and they're very close. The Canucks, I think, had the edge in almost every single game, despite the low amount of shots that they had. And that's kind of continued here, especially in these last few against the Oilers, with the exception of last night. You know, they get wildly outshot in game three, but they create 4 incredible chances and score on all of them. You know, for as much as people were on Skinner for game three, giving up 4 goals on 15 shots, like, show me the goal in game three that was a bad one. I don't think there was one. For Skinner, you could talk about game one, and you could talk about maybe even game two, but in that game three, all 4 of those goals by the Canucks were primo chances, and you're getting a 40 goal scorer bearing down on you right in front of the net. I kind of know what outcome is going to happen here, and that's a goal for Brock Besser or even Elias Lindholm, who scored 40 in the past in his career. So I think they have always been a quality over quantity team, but there is a level where you do want to have a little bit more quantity. And I think that comes down to lengthening out their lineup. If JT Miller and Elias Lindholm are going to get backed up by having to check Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid for most of the night, you're going to need some offense and some, you know, tilting of the ice to happen elsewhere in the lineup. And that just hasn't happened so far.
So on the scale of 1 to Marner, what's the Pedersen temperature at in Vancouver, bud?
It's above a 16, so I think that's above Marner.
Boy, he's taking it right now.
Look, you know, he has the one goal. It came in game two, came in a loss, so people weren't on him too much there. But every time the Canucks have lost a game here in these playoffs, the finger is firmly pointed at number 40, and for a lot of reasons. Like, he has 1 5-on-5 point so far in the playoffs. I mean, that's clearly not good enough, and I know there's a want to say that he looks disinterested and all of those kinds of things, but I feel like this is a player that's gotten it in his head a little bit too much. You know, he signs the big contract. He hasn't been good really since he signed the contract. Is there, oh my God, I have to live up to this massive deal I just signed that's going on in his head, and he's just not playing the game. Bourne, I know you wrote about it a little bit at Sportsnet today. Like, he just feels like a guy that's thinking way too much. And You even look at his media presser today. I mean, he looked like he wanted to be in a million other places on the planet other than having to face the media to talk about how he is performing or not performing in these playoffs. And that's an issue. You know, his body language is an issue. I think that reverberates a little bit through the team at times. Like, for as much as, yeah, you're struggling, there's still a job you have to do. You're still, you know, by virtue of your contract, by virtue of who you are as a player, you are a guy that has to be a leader on this team, even if you're not a big talker and a rah-rah guy.
Yeah.
You can't be that guy that's hanging your head and looking up at the skies and just really not doing even the little things on the ice that we're so accustomed to seeing him do. Like, he does a flyby on Ekholm before the second Oilers
on the goal.
Yeah.
That's just like, that's not the Elias Pettersson I know.
Yeah.
You know, it feels a little bit like being the parent of a surly teen and trying to figure out, how do I approach this? Like, I want to be a parent still, but I don't want to push it too far and push them away. You know, so what is the right thing to do with a guy like Pettersson? Because it feels to me like Rick Tocchet's the guy to be like, well, then we're just not going to play him. You know, he's hit the press box and watch one, or he's going to play 10 minutes. And it's like, don't lose him. You don't want to lose him. Like, you feel like you kind of handle him with kid gloves. So how do you approach?
I have an idea.
Yes.
Maybe put him with one guy who doesn't beat it to a square every shift.
That would be a start.
I mean, playing with Mikheyev and playing with Lafferty and playing with, like, is it Linus Karlsson? It's like, could you give him one guy maybe here?
Does he deserve better? Sorry, we'll let Reese
continue.
There's definitely a part of the line mates conversation here that it needs to be addressed. And I think Rick Tocchet alluded to that more so today than he has at any other point during this stretch. He also did mention he's not changing his top two lines.
He did.
So Elias Pettersson is still getting somebody that's not Elias Lindholm, that's not Brock Besser, that's not JT Miller. Like, he's playing with two of guys that would be considered bottom six type forwards. And that's just the way Rick Tocchet views his best lineup right now. I mean, he's been at times hard on Pettersson. At other times, he's, you know, backed it up and been a little bit more, you know, friendly parent, as you mentioned there. He's he's played good cop and bad cop at times with Pettersson. But, you know, last night, you know, coming off of the game, there's clearly frustration there. And everybody knows the story. It's, you need more from Elias Pettersson. I think they've run out of options on how they are going to get Pettersson going. They've run out of ideas on how they are going to get Pettersson going. Even in-game situationally, when Tocchet has put Pettersson with JT Miller and Brock Besser and reunited the lotto line, like, they've been awful together.
Yeah.
They haven't generated anything. And so if you're Rick Tocchet, you're like, well, to me, that's not really an answer, because every time I've tried it, it doesn't really work. So I'm not going back to that and breaking up things that are actually working for me right now. Pettersson's got to figure it out. Like, yeah, Ilya Mikheyev is your number one line mate. It worked for the first half of the season. Mikheyev had 10 goals by Christmas, and now he's had one goal since. So something is partially on Ilya Mikheyev and him shooting the puck into the crest a bunch of times when Pettersson's setting him up for big chances. But there's also a part where Pettersson just isn't driving play enough. And I don't care if you are playing with two guys that are fresh out of the AHL. You're Elias Pettersson. You're about to make $11.6 million next year. You better win the matchup if you're playing against Ryan McLeod most of the night.
Yeah.
That's just the way the story should be for Elias Pettersson right now.
And it's true, because, like, you know, I had the same talking out of two sides of my mouth. There's like, Marner's got to drive a line. We can put him with anybody. Yeah. He's making all this money. And then I'm like, well, you should put him. Anyways, so I want to flip it to the positive side of this, that two guys that were begged to get out of Vancouver here. They didn't bag, but they were available. People, like, you talk about Besser and you talk about Connor Garland, where people with Connor Garland were like, you got to attach a pick to get rid of him. Besser seemed to be very available. And these two guys, I mean, there's obviously tons of other great contributors to this offense, but Connor Garland, to me, has been amazing this playoffs. Yeah. Like, he's popped to me every time I watch him play, and Besser is scoring every big goal for them. Like, it's crazy the turnaround for these two guys and the contributions they've made to the Canucks run so far.
Besser's been miles better than he was 12, 14 months ago. Looks like a completely different player. And, you know, Besser's never been a guy that's, like, quick. He's got to win the game in other areas, and he's been great on the walls. He's been great defensively. That helps him get into better areas offensively. He's rounded his game out to a point that we saw much earlier in his career, and it's really popping in the playoffs. There was a question, I think, from a lot of people of whether Besser would be a playoff-type player or if he would hide a little bit. Obviously, those are gone out the window with the 7 goals that he has to this point. And as for Garland, you know, like the whole idea that Smurfs can't win in the playoffs, he's been one of the Canucks' best players. So small, short kings like me and Connor Garland can say, you know, you don't need to be the biggest guy to get out there and win. And you know, sometimes, like, if you watch enough Connor Garland, it can be frustrating. He just has to be so crafty to win with his lack of size, the way he's got to win board battles, he can, you know, spin himself into oblivion at times when he's not playing direct. But that's something Rick Tocchet has got him to do, is play a lot more direct. And he's given him a couple of line mates that he's built chemistry with, and it's worked brilliantly. Like last night, you know, this is one of the things about last night's game. Like, good for Connor Garland that he's one of your best players, but also bad for the team that Connor Garland is one of your best players. Like, they need him to keep doing what he's doing, but they need other guys to get going too.
I can guarantee if I was playing against the beer league equivalent of Connor Garland, I would punch him in the face. Like there is no question that I would. And he's got the worst neck guard possible. It's like up to his mouth. He's got this look on his face the whole time. Guy you'd want to kill, and that's why he's so effective. 100%.
So going into this series, I guess, what has changed in your opinion about the Edmonton Oilers from what you thought you were going to get from the Oilers in this series to what you've seen through 4 games?
The two things that changed, I thought Knobloch went to his fastball too early. Like having to load up Draisaitl and McDavid as early as he did in game two and then follow it up again in game three. It seemed a little bit too desperate early in the series. Last night was the Oilers' best game. It happened to be the one that McDavid and Draisaitl didn't have to play 30 minutes. They didn't have to play together. And for me, that's the big red flag of anything that's happened in this series. Last night is the one that should concern Canucks fans the most, because the Oilers played better defensively than we've seen them at any point in this series and probably even in these playoffs. You know, like even against the LA Kings, and one of the things I pointed out at the start of the series, the Kings and Oilers, they were tied 12-12, 5-on-5, even though the Oilers won that series in 5 games. They won it on the back of their power play. And I think they felt like they were going to be able to do that again in this series, but Vancouver's a completely different animal than the LA Kings, who don't even try to forecheck under Jim Hiller. So when you know, they early on in the series, it seemed like the Oilers struggled with that. They obviously struggled with the Canucks' ability to find quality chances in the offensive zone. They missed defensive assignments, as we saw in game three. So when they start to play better defensively, that changes a lot. And that's the thing that I think if I'm a Canucks fan today, I'm worried about, like, has Edmonton figured out something? Have they found a gear that Vancouver can't reach? And that would be probably the storyline going into game 5.
Who has a higher approval rating in Vancouver? Is it Dan Riccio or Zadorov? Who has a higher approval rating?
Well, I'll tell you this. Like, Canucks fans are about to give Nikita Zadorov a blank paycheck.
Well, so am I as a Leaf fan. I get him here. Like, I love this guy. Yeah. You need meatheads on your team, and he is just the perfect guy.
He's a philosopher.
No, but no, like, on the ice.
Yeah,
when he's off the ice, he's great. But, like, having a just straight-up meathead biggest guy on the ice, that helps.
Love that.
Yeah.
I'd love to think that I have a higher approval rating than Nikita Zadorov right now, but I don't think that's the case. Ask me again next year if he does get $6 million a year from Vancouver.
Now we're talking.
People start to turn on him.
Yeah.
This is the thing with Nikita Zadorov. He's been unbelievable. He's had an incredible stretch here in the playoffs. You know, he's playing to his size. He's being the bully on the ice. He's providing some offense. He's doing everything that you want. But I think guys like Nikita Zadorov, they're guys that help you when you get to the playoffs, but they can be tough when you're
getting
living
there
with them for 82 games of the season. And you see some of the moments where he makes a bad pinch, where he makes some bad decisions and he gets punished for it. Like, there's a lot about Nikita Zadorov's game that I absolutely love. He's an incredibly toolsy player. He skates well for as big as he is, and the size just plays for days.
Yeah.
But, you know, there were times in the season where you see his questionable decision making, where he kind of got one of those maintenance day healthy scratches from Rick Tocchet as well. So he's not a perfect player. He's got to be a guy that stays under 20 minutes a night for the most part, but you get him into the playoffs, the whistles go away a little bit, he can play a little bit more physical, all of a sudden you've got a player that you absolutely want to have come this time of year.
Yeah.
Last one, Reach, before we let you go, just want to get your thoughts. I assume everyone is over the Soucy suspension, but it cannot have felt great to see Juulsen run at a guy and be the guy that kind of gives up a rush against, where maybe Soucy just backs off and plays it more conservatively. How is everyone handling the wake of the suspension that never happened to Zadorov, or against Zadorov?
Yeah, they were not happy. And it's mostly, I don't think people were upset that Soucy got a suspension. It was more
that Hyman,
Hyman didn't get anything in the whole situation. And I think Zadorov yesterday kind of spelled it out how we all think of it, right? You know, the NHL is going to protect Connor McDavid. Hockey fans around the globe, they see Connor McDavid take a stick in the face after the game. And it's like, how do you not protect the best player in the league? That guy's got to be protected. And Nikita Zadorov is like, yeah, whatever. He's big. He's Russian.
Strong.
He's he could take lumber to the face. It's all good.
And he had a huge zipped on his chin. So he got him good.
It cut over his eye as well. Yeah. I mean, he looked like he just finished a fight in Rocky Balboa. Or something. That was probably the toughest part. And of course, Vancouver's got an interesting relationship with officials as well. You know, for me, the way this series has been officiated is completely fine. You know, they've called it pretty fair both ways. They've let a lot go. I prefer they let a lot go. Mm-hmm. I just really dislike when they start doing the whole, well, we gave them two, so we got to give these guys two, you know, just try to call it how you see it as best you can and not do the whole makeup call thing. And I think that's essentially the way the Canucks view it as well.
Awesome, man. Well, look, we really appreciate your time. I know Sam was very excited. I am too.
Buddy, I love you, Reach. So great to see you. When you come home sometime in the summer, we'll play some golf. How's that sound?
Yeah. Nice little breakfast round. Sounds good.
Yes, baby.
All right. That's Dan Riccio of Canucks Central. You can listen to that 4 to 6 p.m. Monday to Friday. You know, the Zadorov stuff is fascinating after seeing he actually had like stitches from
that. He had the proof.
So it is pretty crazy that just went away. I know that's what my Canucks fan friends are most mad about, that most people do what Kip did yesterday. Just said, move on. It's like, why are we moving on from that?
I'm sure the people driving around, you know, it's near Stanley Park and near the seawall, they're driving around looking at their beautiful site and they have the guy on the radio be like, doesn't matter. Doesn't matter. Who cares? I'm sure they loved that.
They were not happy. So we should get to game time.
Yeah, we can do some game time.
Let's do that.
All right. It's game time, presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus, Ontario only. Please play responsibly. Now, I'm going to do a little bit of non-hockey here because there's one game tonight.
Yeah.
It's Dallas, and I'll mention the line for you. But I'm looking at the PGA Championship. Because I am a golf guy through and through. Subscribe to the golf show with myself and Brent Gunning. Put up podcasts sporadically. The PGA Championship at Valhalla 10 years ago. Last major that Rory won was at Valhalla, the PGA Championship. It's coming in hot. Just won the Wells Fargo.
He's coming in
warm.
Well, a little emotionally.
Oh, boy.
The very public divorce and the...
Yeah, I mean, the spat with Cantlay. Like, there's a lot of stuff going on here. So maybe you'll get a little bit of revenge Rory, like, just focusing on golf.
Yeah, maybe.
So he's a 7-1 shot. To me, that's a crazy bet to make at the start of the tournament. Maybe see what he does in the first couple of days and then maybe hop on a live bet. But to me, Scottie Scheffler at +425, it seems insane.
Insane to bet a golf tournament and bet one guy at +425.
But I'm going to. Like, I don't...
Basically, you're saying you think he's peak Tiger.
I do. I really think we're at the point here where I know even if he doesn't win, I am aware that when I'm sitting down on Sunday afternoon to rot on my couch, I'm going to be in the fight. Yeah. And I'm going to be able to enjoy watching and have a little cash on him. So I'm going with Scottie Scheffler. And just looking a little bit further down here... Wyndham Clark, undervalued to me at 40-1 on Bet365, as well as Max Homa at 25-1. And I might put a couple bucks on the big golfer, Bryson DeChambeau, at plus 2,500. Loved his performance at the Masters, been hot on LIV, so give me a little bit of Bryson DeChambeau action at 25-1.
What a tournament. So first off, Bet365 hasn't as good numbers on this tournament compared to some I've seen. The this tournament has Rory coming in off a win, Scheffler coming in off a win, and Koepka coming in off a win, which is, I mean, unbelievable combination of golfers.
Koepka's 14-1. I didn't love the way he looked at the Masters. Didn't think he looked like the normal dog in him, Koepka.
He looked like the guy at the Florida Panthers game heckling Aaron Ekblad.
He absolutely did. His peas, right? He goes on the peas.
The peas.
All right. That was Game Time presented by Bet365. Visit the app for latest odds and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Must be 19 plus. Ontario only. Please play it responsibly.
So the... what?
I got a great text. I got to read it.
Let's have it.
If I wanted to hear some a-hole talk about golf, I'd talk to my father-in-law. Get to the hockey.
That's great. That's great. Okay, we will. We're going to get back to hockey. When we come back after the break, we're going to listen to Blackburn, the co-host of the What Chaos podcast. We'll be back in a moment.
The best Blue Jays show out there, period. Blair and Barker. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Real Kipper and Bourne. I am Justin Bourne. We just listened to Dan Riccio, your boy Sammy, who's out west in Vancouver, giving us the lowdown on all things Canucks. Do you feel any different about the Canucks status after our conversation with them?
I picked the Canucks to win the series. I still feel like the Canucks are going to win the series. I have not changed.
I got to tell you, there's some series, three of them, to me, that just feel like it should so clearly be one team that wins. Like the Bruins are without Marchand. The Panthers are kind of rolling a little bit. It just feels like it's going to be Florida. It just feels like Colorado after losing to Nichushkin.
Yeah,
they're Taves is hurt. It just feels like they're cooked. The Canucks, it's 2-2.
Yeah.
They're alive in the series. It doesn't need to feel that way, but it feels bad.
For the Canucks?
It feels bad.
You think it feels bad for the Canucks?
Yeah.
Why? You know,
well, I just think that things started to kind of go the Oilers' way a little bit. Shelov's kind of lets one at the end that's not perfect.
Yeah, but maybe they scrambled to tie the game again.
Yeah.
Like they got, I don't know,
but
man.
They're still not getting looks. The Oilers feel like at some point they're going to break out. I will say, they got Calvin Pickard in net. You can beat him. There's no doubt about it, but it does. Maybe that's just my preconceived notion going into the series that the Oilers would eventually take it over, but it feels nervous times for Canucks.
Okay, I'm really not feeling that.
Okay.
I've watched every game closely, and I just feel like they're two very evenly matched teams in terms of playing in the same division. They know each other extremely well.
The Canucks have handled them all season long.
They play well against them. I like the top guys on the Canucks. Obviously, the top guys in the Oilers are very good. Stay out of the box. Like, they're a power play team.
Yeah.
Their power play goal, when they get on there, it's like a 50% shot. You're getting one in the back of the net. So I can get what you're feeling, but I do have a feeling about the Canucks. I can't help myself.
I feel dumb saying it when Pickard's in net. It's a dumb thing to say when you have a guy who's never played. He's 32 and he's playing his first playoff game.
Yeah. I saw a lot. Like, did you think it was that gutsy of a move?
No, I didn't think it was overly ballsy. Skinner's been not very good.
Okay.
We are joined by Pete Blackburn, the co-host of the What Chaos podcast. What's up, Pete? How are you, man?
What's going on? Thanks for having me.
Hey, buddy.
Yeah, we're excited to have you. We're all wrapped up talking about Vancouver and Edmonton, ready to turn the page to the Boston-Florida series. I was saying it just feels like things have tipped towards Florida, where Marchand is out, and they're supposed to win this series, but Boston gets one in Game 5. Is there life in the Bruins here?
Yeah, I mean, just when I thought I was out, like if you asked me yesterday afternoon, I would have said, just lose yesterday's game. Please lose game five. End it for me. Put me out of my misery. I have life now. Call me a sucker. I liked the 60-minute effort that the Bruins showed yesterday. They were strong on the forecheck. They won battles. They were a little bit crisper in their execution. Obviously, Jeremy Swayman remains good. Charlie McAvoy got on the board. He needed that one so badly. I think the Bruins do have life. You're talking about them going to game six back at home in Boston with the juice of that crowd on a Friday night. The important thing for them, though, is to get off to a strong start, because you've seen the starts that the Bruins have had in this series. And the thing that made me feel good the most yesterday was 13 shots on goal in the first period. That's sad to say, but like that felt like a miracle for the Bruins based off of the way that they were starting games in this series. So they would do themselves a huge, huge favor in game six at home, getting the crowd behind them early.
You, Pete, are going through the exact same thing that I went through last round where the Boston Bruins ended up beating the Toronto Maple Leafs as they always do. But after going into game five, the amount just of conversations I had with my Leaf fan buddies about like, just end it now. I don't want
misery.
This anymore. I
give
don't want to watch this anymore. And then ultimately they found the way to find the most heartbreak possible.
Yeah, nice.
So yeah, it was great of them to do that. But yeah, I just, your general sense about this Bruins team, the officiating stuff has been out of control. I watched that game last night and that goaltender interference on, or the lack thereof on Charlie McAvoy, to me, was 100% goaltender interference, and they did not have the guts to do it. Because of the way the conversation was going, I couldn't believe that they didn't. It was almost as bad as the other one to me, and they didn't call it. I didn't think they had the guts. I really didn't.
So I initially thought that it was 100% goaltender interference when I thought that Danton Heinen knocked the stick out of Sergei Bobrovsky's hand.
Bobrovsky drops the stick every time. He does. He drops the stick every time anyone goes near him.
You
so.
Sneeze on that guy, he throws a stick in the corner. The Danton Heinen, when I saw after a few replays that it was actually Oliver Ekman-Larsson that knocked the stick out, I peeled back a little bit. I was like, oh, maybe it's not goaltender interference. Ultimately, I think that Heinen's stick getting under Bobrovsky's skate opens it up to being goaltender interference, obviously. But I also do think that he had time to reset. And that ultimately is probably why they ruled it not goaltender interference. It's obviously up to interpretation, but based on that and based on what happened in game four, there was zero chance that they were going to call that goaltender interference. If there was any gray area, there's no way in hell that they were going to take that goal off the board. So I wasn't that worried once I saw a few replays.
I have to say, I was watching the game and I was like, oh my God, they're not going to do this, are they? Like,
Multi-game makeup call is a hell of a move. The NHL set a new personal best. So tell me about Jim Montgomery, who's like a fascinating character. I don't think I've ever seen him as animated and all in the game. He was rocking on the bench to start the game. Like he was, we saw the actions. This guy's invested, man.
Yeah, I wonder how much of that was a result of some of the blowback that he caught after game four in his press conference, because he was obviously, he was very pissed on the bench in game four after the goaltender interference. He was screaming. And then you get to the press conference after that game and he pulls back a little bit. He doesn't bring his checkbook to the presser. And I think a lot of people were really upset about that. And they interpreted it as a lack of spine. So I wonder how much that carried over to game five for Jim Montgomery to say, all right, well, if that's the case, I'm going to leave it all out on the bench. And boy, did he. Some of the clips from game five on the bench were hilarious. So I give him credit, but I do. That thought did cross my mind.
I love lack of spending $25K as a lack of spine. You know, like
I love the one where he's leaned back and someone got the air guitar in his hands. It's incredible. I love a coach coaching hard like that. And it kind of brings me to the other side of it, where Maurice loses his mind on the bench last night. And, of course, they go out and score in the next shift. They end up losing the game. He says all the stuff post-game. In these playoff series, I really find myself finding a way to hate the opposing coaches almost more than any of the players. Like, I really find the way that they talk to the media. And a lot of it has to do because it's been Maurice, it's been Cooper, it's been Jim Montgomery over these past few years. But Maurice is a different animal to me in terms of the way he addresses me. Like, you had him last year, clearly, with the Bruins playing them in the first round. But, like, he is a very frustrating, annoying opposing coach to go against as a fan.
Yeah, so we had this conversation this morning on the show. And my co-host DJ said that he found Paul Maurice to be kind of annoying and, like, smug. And I get that. I agree with it. But I also, there are two reasons why I do like it. Number one, it's better than being boring.
Oh,
it's good to, the entertainment factor is great. I think he's a pretty funny guy. Do I like him as the opposition? No, of course not. But then on the second point, I wonder how much Paul Maurice does this to kind of take heat off of his players. Because when he goes to the podium and he gives you some golden quotes, the media is not going away from that hungry for something else and pressing players. And it seemingly has worked where, like, How much have you heard from Florida Panthers players in the aftermath of the last few games? Not a ton, because it's Paul Maurice dominating the headlines and dominating the clips on Twitter. So if that's the strategy, it's working, and I respect it.
Yeah. No, it is. It is absolutely hilarious.
You said to me earlier that he's like almost like a character actor.
Well, yeah, it's like he's doing a bit, right? Yeah. He's like working on a new set.
Or to me, it's like if Daniel Day-Lewis was cast as like a hockey coach,
and
he was, that's what he would be like. That's how he would be acting. Like that stuff with the presser last night was insane.
Yesterday, I called him White Collar Torts, and I feel like that's a pretty good description of Paul Maurice.
That's actually perfect. That's perfect.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense. So you talked about how Montgomery handled the press conference after game four. I wonder how you felt about handling of the goaltenders, actually getting Ullmark in at one point. And if you ever, it's just now it feels like it's going to be Swayman's net, almost like whatever happens. I imagine that'll be the case.
Yeah, I can't imagine that it would go in the other direction unless the bottom falls out. And if the bottom falls out, the season's probably over.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
and Marchand, will he come back at some point? What's the updates on his sort of health?
I mean, I haven't heard anything. You can ask Paul Maurice, because he was the one who making the jokes about 20,000 cameras on Brad Marchand and sipping the water bottle. I don't know. You know, obviously, it seems, I think the logical conclusion is that it's a head issue.
Yeah.
You know, I think that it's probably concussion related. So, you know, you never know how those things go. But as far as the Ullmark thing goes, like, I thought that was the perfect opportunity to put Ullmark in the series, because that game was over. And number one, you give Jeremy Swayman a bit of a mental reprieve from that game, which was getting out of hand.
Mm-hmm.
And number two, you get Linus Ullmark some work, because it had been 2+ weeks since he had seen any game action. And God forbid anything happens to Jeremy Swayman, or you need to go to Linus Ullmark for whatever reason, having him be out of action for 2+ weeks is a bad position to be in if you're the Bruins. So I was kind of looking for opportunities to sneak Linus Ullmark into action during these playoffs so that he's not so cold. But Swayman was just playing so well that there really was no excuse to go away from him.
So what's the believometer at here, Peak, going into game six? Because, you know, what is the reason that gives you the biggest belief that they can come back and do this? Kind of reverse last year's 3-1.
I think that, like, that you finally saw the desperation factor arrive to the Bruins, and the start that they got in game five gave me some hope. And obviously Jeremy Swayman, I thought that Jeremy Swayman didn't look quite as sharp yesterday as he has throughout most of the playoffs. He was still really good. I mean, they only gave up one goal, but I thought that it was a much improved defensive effort from the Bruins, and they shoot themselves in the foot. And I think those reasons give me more confidence, the desperation and the actual playing adult hockey and playing defensive hockey against a Florida Panthers team that is better than you on paper. So that's the only reason that I have confidence heading into game six. At the outset of the series, I picked Panthers in six. I still think the Panthers are a better team. And my big problem with the Bruins overall this year and during this playoff run is that they don't string together consistent games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a hard reset after every single game, for better or for worse. And so I don't know how much carryover there's going to be in game six, and that gives me pause.
Last one here, and I'll let you go. I just want to get your thoughts on Sam Bennett. Is everyone over chasing Sam Bennett around in Boston? Has that become secondary to the plot of trying to win the series, or do they still want his head?
No. In 30 years, if you ask a Bruins fan what they think of Sam Bennett, they will throw profanities at you. That guy, there's no coming back for that guy in terms of the Bostonian purview.
He is a nail gun.
Yeah.
Like, he just...
He is. Like, that's the guy... That's the kind of guy that you want. I know that it's dirty, it's cheap, it's... He's nasty, and he's a good player, and those are the kind of guys you want in your roster when it comes to playoff hockey. And I think that if you asked Bruins fans if they would take Sam Bennett on the roster right now, 100% of them would say absolutely yes, because they want that nasty. They lack the nasty on this roster. Like, you have to throw Pat Maroon out there to be your nasty representative. And honestly, not to be mean, like, throwing Pat Maroon out there is probably a negative for your product on the ice.
And it's not like Bennett's going to give Maroon that.
He's never
going to fight him in a playoff series. There's just no chance. Yeah. I mean, he should have been suspended. Like, I hate to give the credit to the Bruins fans here and everything, but like, he should have been gone a game or two. There's no question. He punched him in the face. Tough one. Tough one. So,
I just need the answers as to why the replay, the reverse angle replay, disappeared until 5 minutes before game four. Need to know what happened there.
And there was like flimsy report.
Yes.
There's a flimsy report. They're like, yes, they had that angle for sure. And they still decide, like, if they had that angle and decided not to do it, then we have to have real questions. And I guess we do have real questions about the Department of Player Safety.
Espionage. I like it. Well, Pete, we really appreciate your time today, man. Thanks for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, buddy.
All right. That's Pete Blackburn, co-host of the What Chaos podcast. Great podcast. Pete's a great guy.
I hate to admit it, but yeah, Bennett should have been gone for a game or two. You know, I was talking about this at hockey last night with the guys and getting their, I love getting the thoughts of just the room on this kind of stuff. One of my buddies made a great point. Matt, he said that you never know what's going to happen when you go to hit Marchand, right? Where like, if you're going in on Marchand and you're thinking about hitting him, like he could just as well throw up the elbow, go a little lower on you, could stick you, could do whatever. Didn't need to completely punch him in the face, but it is a bit of an unpredictable event going to hit Brad Marchand, which I thought was a great point. So that's
like
one side of it.
Body checking an oncoming car. It's like, I can brace for this, but it's probably not going to go how I see it going in my head.
So I thought that was a good point. And he deserved a suspension. Bruins fans have the right to be upset.
Yeah.
But I don't really care.
Yeah. No, you certainly don't. The Paul Maurice stuff is fascinating to me. I think we should take some time and listen to his presser.
Sure.
Or a couple of clips, just a clip or two.
What do we got here?
We got his thoughts just on game six. And
heading into game six, the one that he alluded to about watching Marchand, let's play that. That's clip one from Paul Maurice, Derek.
How your club played tonight, I'm sure you would have liked.
Nope. That's Rick Tocchet. Paul Maurice, clip one. Thank you.
Right, it's going to be an absolute barn burner in there. There'll be 18,000 cameras on the morning skate just to see if when he sips of the water bottle Brad Marchand takes, it's going to be some high-end investigative journalism. You guys go home and get a nap? Because you got some to do in a couple days. Okay.
is that not lend
what
credence to what Pete said? He's like, he's trying to put it all on Boston. You're all going to be watching him. You're going to go have a nap because you got some investigative journalism to do.
What is that clip? Like, he is out of his mind with these things.
You know what it kind of does make me feel, though, is like, if they lose this series, like, they just dropped a game to potentially put away the Bruins, and now they're going back to Boston. They lose this series. Like, could you not criticize that maybe he's having a little bit too much fun in, like, at a pretty pivotal moment?
Yeah, all 10
show out there.
All 10 Panthers fans will kill him for that.
Oh, not this again.
Oh. There's just so, like, there's stakes with money involved and all this, but, like, it's just no fan
stakes. No one's going to hold his feet to the fire for this.
We're not going
to
be like, if that happened in Toronto, that would be called the press conference. there would be a date and everyone would remember it. Like, there would be called something bad here.
Yeah.
There, it's just, you can do that and you can get away with it more there. It
I
just
do
comes
love
down to
that
it.
Maurice exactly. is comfortable. He's been in enough playoff series and in enough moments like this where he doesn't seem overwhelmed. You know, like Sheldon Keefe, sometimes a little stressed out by things. You know, Chris Knobloch's a new coach in a big moment. You're not getting a lot of crack smiles. Like, Paul Maurice is out there. They just lost a playoff game by a goal. Mm-hmm. And he's out there cursing and finger guns.
Would you like to hear the second clip from Paul Maurice? Let's play Paul Maurice number two.
Just thought they needed some profanity in their life. I brought some. I don't excel a lot of things in life, but am I good at that? See how I did that? Okay.
Having to explain your jokes.
You know, I just felt that we're grinding gears a little bit because I think we have a handful of things that we're really, really good at. And we come to the rink and that's all we spend our time talking, what we're doing. We're a good hockey team. Everything flows from it. It's the giving tree. Like, and we didn't have our four or five things as our focus.
I don't know what that last part was.
The giving tree.
It's a good book. It's tragic, actually.
I don't know what's going on with this guy. But I do want a t-shirt that says I'm not good at many things, but F me, I'm good at cursing or whatever.
I'm good at profanity.
For profanity, that's what I would like on a t-shirt.
Yeah, but it is funny, though. So I had a package prepared. I was all on tilt last night on the broadcast. I kind of forgot what we were doing. But anyway, I had started doing a pack on how Florida basically couldn't get in. Boston was defending really well. Then much like here in Toronto when Maurice had his profanity-filled tirade that turned their season around.
Right away.
Right away they came out. They scored. They took it to Boston. All of a sudden they started getting a lot of chances. You don't get many opportunities to push the button that Maurice pushed there.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know that he does it often over the course of the season, but he obviously does it infrequently enough that he gets a response to it.
And he pressed that button, you lose the game. It's a different
thing.
The
button starts to die.
Yeah.
You like, stop getting feedback
that's,
on it.
Yeah, you know, that was easy button. Like that's, you know, you got to keep hammering away at it sometimes. And I would be concerned. I mean, if I was one of the 15 people that love the Florida Panthers, like I'm watching the game last night. It's like, you know, people kill Toronto fans for being quiet or whatever. There's dressed like a seat night and like at least 100 seats in the lower bowl in game five where you have a chance to eliminate the Boston Bruins. I'm not a Bruins fan down there. It's like, I just,
if you're frustrated.
Well, like we're barreling towards here another no state tax bowl where it's going to be Florida and Dallas in the final potentially. It's like, you can't tell me this isn't an advantage.
No.
Like these teams that play in these markets with no pressure, no state tax, sick weather, all the guys want to go there. None of the guys want
to
be.
You're not making a case for getting anyone to stay here, I can tell you
well,
that.
Well, no, I know. Listen, but it is what it is. Like, I mean, sure, you can win the cup and you will always be a cup winner, but you're going to be a cup winner with the Panthers. And that'll always, you know, it'll.
Go back for your like alumni celebration event and, you know.
Be like, who are you again? Like, did you play? Like, it's just, to me,
and who
it
else?
Just sucks. It sucks. Like, yeah. I it's a hobby horse of mine where, you know, maybe it's the Rogers media part of me too. It's like we're barreling towards, you know, Dallas and Florida. Great. Like,
I will say, there is some piece of me that has grown on the front of, would you cheer for any Canadian team to win a cup? It used to be a ridiculous question.
No.
The suggestion was ridiculous, right? No, that's not my team. No more than Vegas is my team. But it would be nice to see, you know, the fan bases here are unbelievable. This Canucks fan base, out of their mind.
Yeah, I love it.
In a positive way.
Love
like
it.
There is like this insane passion that is bordering on insanity that right now is been great to see. Obviously, the Oilers fans never go away. We'll say that's one thing with Oilers fans. They've been bad for years. They can be bad for years. They don't go away. They stick with this team through and through. So good to see them.
Can we get a parade with over 1 million people at it?
That would be lovely.
That's where I'm at. That's hey, give me the Rangers. Rangers get through. That's a real franchise, real fans. But it's like, Florida, really? God.
There's going to be
kills
more.
Me.
There's going to be more and more of this as more teams get a franchise in other places. And so the passion places are going to have fewer opportunities to celebrate.
Gary, it's like, you got your parody, buddy, and all the Florida teams win. Great.
Yeah.
Gary Batman.
I can't imagine the sports network loves the idea of a Florida-Dallas final.
Yeah, no, I would agree with that.
How about new?
We do have one more clip.
Drop C. McGee up there. Holy.
Let's listen to Talk about his performance as we say, you know, one more note on that series.
How your club played tonight, I'm sure you would have liked a game where you maybe had the puck a little more, maybe defended a little bit less, even if you're happy with your play from the blue line in. But what does it say about your group that you're able to be off for much of the evening and then still find a way late?
Yeah, we've been a resilient group all year, but we need five or six guys to get going here. I mean, it's the Stanley Cup playoffs. I had some guys I don't know if they thought it was the playoffs. So we can't play 12 guys. So we got to figure it out quick. It's 2-2. Obviously, it's a tough one. Edmonton came to play. They wanted it more early. The second goal at the end of the period was a killer. Another couple of given mistakes, and then the last goal. So, I mean, it's just can't do that.
It was a killer. And, God, Nuge.
Jolson did hit Ekholm hard, but it ain't. We learned this watching McCabe run around the year before. Yeah. It ain't. The juice ain't worth the squeeze on that hit.
No, and Nugent Hopkins, so good at that low blocker snapper.
But he looked off Connor McDavid.
Ping, right off the post and in.
Yeah.
He's underrated, Nuge.
Yeah.
I love to hammer on the underrated guy conversation. To me, he's actually in, and it's in a Canadian market. And I think he's not underrated there, but outside of Edmonton, to me, he's a super underrated guy. That's a massive goal at the end of a period. That's such a killer.
How do you feel about a head coach calling out his team in playoffs the way Taka did there? We usually talk about guys do that, and then they get to playoffs and they back off.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. It's Rick Tocchet.
Pedal down.
It's Rick Tocchet, man. Yeah. He can say what he wants. He's got the all-time lead in Gordie Howe hat tricks. He can say what he wants.
All right. Well, thank you for joining me today.
I loved it.
Sammy, a wonderful day. Thank you to Pete Blackburn, Coastal What Chaos Podcast, Dan Riccio of Canucks Central, and J.D. Bunkus of the J.D. Bunkus Podcast. We'll be back tomorrow, presumably, with Nick Kiprios. Everyone, enjoy the game tonight.